Howard, welcome back to the show. How are you doing? Howard, is there anything that you like on your pizza that isn't common?
Wow, that's a good question. Probably, you know, I can't think of anything. I like a bunch of different things on it, but uncommon, probably not.
Okay.
Probably not.
My go-to
is good mushrooms. Got to be good mushrooms.
Okay.
And sausage. Now, I like anything. I like a little bacon on there. Certainly some pepperoni from time to time and all those good things. But mushroom and sausage are my favorite.
Okay. Howard, we'll get to on-field stuff and everything, but it seems like maybe for the first time ever, with some pressure from big partners, that Washington is going to have to change their team name.
It sure looks that way. And obviously it took that financial pressure to get there to even be a conversation about it. But certainly the Redskins wouldn't issue a statement today saying that we are going to have discussions about what to do going forward. They wouldn't do that and then come out afterwards and say, well, you know, we decide to go with the way it is. So obviously that's not the case. But there was a hint that they might try to do something that gives a positive shout out, or whatever you want to call it, to its quote Native American history and tradition. I don't know how they do that, but I'm sure that sounds like that's going to be a part of the discussion. You know, it's just too bad that it wasn't done for the right reasons all along instead of bowing to pressure. But the reality is, so much of all these things that are changing now is because of pressure and because of protest and because of people just waking up and understanding what our American society was built on, and that was built on taking advantage of Native Americans and African Americans and all those things. And so it's taken a long time, but hopefully this is just another notch in the progress that needs to continue to be made.
You wrote about Kurt Warner, who, of course, for those who don't know, is a kind of a rags-to-riches story, former grocery store stock boy, and then he ends up winning the Super Bowl. And now there's going to be the Kurt Warner story made to a movie. Is this correct?
Yeah, that's definitely correct. It's been talked about for a while, and everyone knew it was coming, but officially it was announced earlier this week that they have announcing the actor that will play Kurt, and that is Zachary Levi of Shazam fame and a whole bunch of things he's done on TV and movies on Broadway. And the other thing is that people go to the story on si.com/NFL/Cardinals. There's a picture of Levi right next to Kurt, a picture of him right next to Kurt Warner. And you look at them and you say, oh my goodness, I'm not going to say it's a spitting image, but it's pretty darn, it's a pretty remarkable resemblance. So they're saying that the production will start at the end of this year. We'll see how that all plays out with the pandemic and all that. But it is an amazing story. And living in St. Louis, I was up close and personal to a lot of it when everything happened with the Rams. You know, the whole stock boy thing, of course, is a little bit, it's not exaggerated, but
yeah,
it's not as if he had never played football before and all of a sudden he was stocking shelves, but he was doing that between jobs playing arena football. And so arena football doesn't, you know, pay decent money, but not a whole lot. And so he finally got the opportunity to do that. And he, you know, who knows? There's so many what ifs in Kurt Warner's career and the things that happened that led to him just getting even a chance to play, much less doing what he did when he finally got that opportunity, that the list of those what ifs is very, very long.
Howard Balzer joins. Now, Howard, the thing I didn't know when I was reading your article was how Warner became part of the Rams, and it was actually the Amsterdam Admirals head coach had asked then-GM Charlie's Army just to give Warner a tryout and then allocate him to NFL Europe so he could tell his fans that their quarterback was on an NFL roster. And, well, lo and behold, that didn't pan out.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's exactly right. And the amazing thing about it is after he was signed by the Rams. It was right at the end of the 1997 season, at the end of December, after he had a tryout. And about a month later, I'm at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama, and Dick Vermeil, I happened to run into him during the day, and he invited me to come to a team dinner that night at this restaurant across the bay in Mobile, kind of like an outdoorsy, very down-home restaurant with picnic tables that had linoleum, red and white checked tablecloth, not even tablecloths, if you want to call like a plastic thing a tablecloth. But anyway, I happened to be sitting next to Jerry Rome, who was the Rams' offensive coordinator at the time. And that part of the story was that, you know, Jerry Rome, when he was hired by Vermeil as offensive coordinator, brought one of his pets with him, Will Fuhrer, a left-handed quarterback. And, you know, a lot of coordinators have their favorite guys just to have as a backup. And so Jerry Rome didn't want any, he didn't want anything to do with Kurt Warner. And so I happened to be sitting next to him at this dinner. And I said, "Hey, I saw you sign the kid from Arena League." And he looks at me like I was from Mars. And I said, "Yeah, you know, Kurt Warner." And he kind of harumphed and didn't even say anything. I found out later he wasn't even at the tryout when Warner threw the football. And so, you know, later that next summer after NFL Europe, and he comes back to the Rams for training camp, and Jerry Rome still wanted to keep Will Fuhrer because he had made the team the previous year instead of a decent journeyman quarterback named Jamie Martin, who wasn't the greatest quarterback in the world, but he was a lot better than Will Fuhrer. But he made the team the year before. And so Jerry Rome wanted to keep Will Fuhrer instead of Kurt Warner. Well, and that might have been the biggest what-if of all, because if Dick Vermeil listened to Jerry Rome, Kurt Warner would have been cut, and nothing probably would have happened after that. Because let's remember, he went to training camp with the Packers as an undrafted free agent rookie in 1994. He was the fourth quarterback behind Brett Favre, Mark Brunell, and Ty Detmer. And at one training camp practice, he refused. Steve Bariucci was the quarterback's coach, and he said, "Kurt, get in there." And it was like, I don't know if it was with the ones or the twos or whatever. And Warner was so intimidated, he refused to go in. And this was in practice. That's how overwhelmed he was by the whole situation. So the Packers cut him, and so that's 94. And he doesn't sign with the Rams until 97 after his years in the Arena League. The other crazy story is that, I don't remember the exact year, but it's between 94 and 97, he had a tryout arranged with the Bears to come in and throw for them. And he had just got back from his honeymoon, and he got some kind of spider bite on his right arm, and his arm blew up and was all swollen and infected, and he couldn't go to the tryout. And then he never got another chance. So all these crazy parts, I don't know if they'll be able to cover it all in this story. I hope they do, because those are a lot of the little details that a lot of people don't know about and don't remember, including, as you noted, you didn't mention it, that was in the story, was after the 98 season, after Warner did make the Rams, the Browns were coming into the NFL as an expansion team, and the Rams left Kurt Warner unprotected in the expansion draft. And Dick Vermeil always tells people later, "Well, I just knew they weren't going to take him, and we didn't want to, you know, put somebody else out there that we were really worried about losing. But obviously, they didn't think somebody would take him, but they weren't totally worried that someone would. And the Browns took a quarterback. I think he went to Duke, Scott Milanovich, and they took him in the expansion draft instead of Kurt Warner." And so that was in 99. I mean, that was in the off season in 99, which of course ended up being the Rams Super Bowl year. So yeah, it's an amazing story, and it'll be very interesting to see how, in whatever it is, an hour and a half, 2 hour movie, how much of those little details they can tell, because I like I said, to me those are the most important stories, because without any of that, as unlikely as it turned out that he played like he did, If any of those other things hadn't happened, then he never even would have had the opportunity, much less with, you know, Trent Green tearing his ACL at the end of training camp in 99, which gave Warner his opportunity to play.
Howard Balzer joins us. Love that story. Howard, imagine the guy. No, coach, I can't go in. No surprise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He gets let go. Now, Howard, of course, you're covering the Cardinals. You know, the NFL, I know there's a vote on kind of a return to play protocol for not return to play, but just kind of how things will be different with the NFL. Now, the NBA and the NHL are planning, you know, they're going to have games starting at the end of this month, but they're in bubbles, you know, right. Edmonton and Toronto, and then, of course, in Orlando. The NFL doesn't have that luxury. Do you see we know that the preseason is going to be shorter, which, thankfully, it's probably should have been shorter for a long time, but what's the biggest challenge, you think, for the NFL, and is it all going to depend on what they see that happens with MLB if we're going to see NFL this fall?
Yeah, I think a lot could depend on MLB, but let's remember one thing. You can find out, you can learn certain things from what happens to them, but think of this. Of all the four major sports, the one that at least on the field has the most as significant social distancing is baseball. Because everybody, you know, except for at the plate for each batter, when you have the catcher and the umpire, yeah, and the batter, who are pretty close together, but of course they all have the catcher has a mask anyway, as the umpire does. And so, but those are the only ones who are really close. And part of the protocol in baseball is about even when a runner's on and the first baseman, you know, not being too close. I don't know how you do it with potential pickoffs or things like that. But for the most part, virtually everybody, at least on the field, is social distance. You don't have that in football. You certainly don't have it in the NBA. You don't have it in hockey. And but those teams have five, obviously with hockey, you have the goalie. He's not in the action that much. It's only when it's around him. But everybody else is hitting each other and all those things. But it's only five guys. The NFL, you got 11. And, you know, five of them are going against each other on every play on the offensive line, the defensive line, and the tackling and all those things. So I don't know how much you can truly learn from Major League Baseball. I think the biggest thing is going to be once camps open, and all of a sudden, you know, there's talk of maybe taking fewer players than 90 to camp. But so what? So it's 80 instead of 90. That's still a lot of players, a lot of coaches who are older, a lot of support staff with trainers and doctors and all the different people that are around. And so to me, that's going to be the biggest question is, you know, what happens during the preseason if guys start testing positive and they start having to isolate guys and then get more players to practice with. So that and then obviously it's going to continue during the season. So I think everything is a kind of an open palette, so to speak, because no one can truly predict how this is all going to play out. And then the biggest thing comes down, what do these players do when they're away from the team, when they're going home? Or, you know, you can tell them, hey, be careful, stay home, and all those things. But, you know, some people have live-in elderly people in their homes. You know, some have pre-existing conditions. And so especially the big players with that body mass index. So that there's so many factors to this that I don't know that anybody can truly predict how it's going to play out.
Howard, it's a fascinating. What do you make of the Cardinals and how they look right now on paper for this coming season?
On paper, they look to be a pretty good football team. Obviously, you know, Kyler Murray in his second year showed a lot of progress towards the end of the season. The defense was playing better at the end of the season as they got comfortable with Vance Joseph's defense. Now they've added some new defensive players. They've added, obviously, DeAndre Hopkins to the offense. And they'll have Kenyon Drake for a full season. I mean, he had 643 yards in just the final eight games of the season. And that was without having a DeAndre Hopkins taking the pressure off the defense. So they've got the chance, I think, to be a pretty good football team. Certainly the division is very good with the 49ers, Seahawks, and Rams. So you can be a very improved team, but still not win a tremendous amount of games because of that division. But I don't think there's any doubt that they're on the right track and building something pretty good there.
Oh, well, I'm very interested to see Kyler Murray with that receiving core in Arizona next year. It should be fascinating. Howard, always great to talk some football with you. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Same to you guys. Take care.